Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Specht.
Hello.
How's it going, Derek?
I'm a little phlegmy from my cold 2 weeks ago. So I may clear my throat a few dozen times.
As long as you're not horking on the floor.
No, I don't hork. I'm not a horking person.
Now that everybody's grossed out. So how you been?
Fantastic. First real feeling of winter so far. Right. Although it's going to supposed to warm up to double digits by next week.
Well, the snow's already gone from our backyard.
Yeah. I didn't expect it to last long.
No.
It's still too early.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. But, you know, you get that first snowfall out of the way, and everybody says, oh, no, I got to get my winter tires on. And now nobody can get an appointment because, you know, everybody's trying to make the appointment for today. Yeah.
I did tires on three cars this weekend. Actually, I just say Beckett did. So my 12-year-old removed and reinstalled tires on two of the three vehicles.
Really?
Yeah.
While you weren't looking.
He was very happy with himself.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
As your wife calls and says, one of my tires fell off in the bar one. Cruising down the highway.
No, there was a QA assistant there. I was making sure everything was torqued up properly.
Standing there, beer in your hand. Come on, tighten that herder. Tighten that one.
Exactly.
You missed one. How do you expect to work out of the F1? An F1 road crew.
No brakes.
I never bother doing my own. I always take it in hand. I have now, I didn't get on rims. So I've actually got to take my summer or my all seasons off my rims.
Oh.
And then put my winter tires on my rims. Saved me money at the time. And then I just got lazy and just didn't buy new rims.
Yeah. I bought a second set of rims just for that. So Siobhan has steel rims, you know, the typical winter tire rims, and I went and bought a set of aluminum rims for mine. And I'm on my second vehicle, same tires, so I just bought the same vehicle again, and tires fit.
I got the rims and tires for Tracy's winter tires and that.
Yeah.
But mine, I just got the tires. It happened that way.
Yeah.
So what?
Which is fine. Which is fine.
I'm not judging.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be judgy, McJudgerson. You holier than thou attitude, you people with your aluminum rims.
Yeah.
You had a visitor, though.
I did have a visitor. So we knew that we had Mike Nichols on as a guest previously, and he told us about some trips he'd been on and the trip he's currently on. And
he drove all the way from BC all the way to Temagami to see if we were lying to him or not. And we weren't.
Yeah. And then he ended up in, he born and raised in Newfoundland, I guess. And so he went back and visited family and so on. He came back from Newfoundland and he sent me a message. I was standing in the Tim Hortons on a Saturday morning. I was out grabbing some stuff to eat before I started doing tires, and I got a message. I almost laughed out loud right inside Tim Hortons. But what did he say? He said, I've got beer and logs.
Beer and logs, yes.
Beer and logs. So he had, Sean is off playing on the water. I have logs from Deer Lake and that you're interested in and a couple of dildo beverages.
Yeah, because you were talking about the logs under the water that don't.
Yes.
They're like 200 years old sort of thing.
Not that old. The hydroelectric project was built in about 1925. So a lot of those logs would have been, some of them could be very old, but they stopped the log driver in 1925 when they built the hydroelectric project. And so they moved on to other routes to move the logs. So these logs are probably over 100 years old.
So they cut them down at 100 years of age, and they've been sitting there for 100 years, which would make them 200 years old. We're not guessing. We know. I know 200-year-old logs.
Anyway. So he grabbed some really unique pieces of wood. Like, they are so heavy. Like, shockingly heavy. Like, it's probably going to take about 5 to 10 years from the dry out. You pick up one of the, it's like shockingly, it's like 4 or 5 times what you expect it to be, right?
And if you leave it outside, it'll freeze and crack.
maybe. So they're in the garage right now. So they're going to spend the next few years drying in my garage. And I have to figure out what to do with them. One of them is, do you know how a pine tree gets all knotty from all the knots are bare because of wind blown and sea breeze and branches dying, and you just see the lumpy knots on it? So it looks like that.
Okay.
It's all some bark still there, a little tiny bit of bark, but so that one's very unique. I don't know what to do with it. I have to figure something out.
Make
and then
statue.
there's a 4 foot, 2 4 foot logs, round logs. One looks like a walking stick, or Siobhan called it a shillelagh or something. It's a bonking stick that in Ireland you take it and you whack people with.
No,
it.
No, shillelagh. Yeah.
And, it was just a nice big round log. And, so heavy. So much waterlogged. And plus he got some glasses and some beers from the Dildo Brewing Company in Dildo, Newfoundland.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a stout Dildo and a Red Rocks Ale, and got some stickers and an iceberg beer and some glasses.
And we're going to have to drink these.
Yeah.
See how well they taste.
How exciting is that?
Right?
I was not expecting. Yeah, it's like I remember mentioning to him the logs, and yeah, grab me some logs.
Yeah, I didn't expect any new beer too.
So I very much appreciate it, Mike. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
yeah. I was paddling on Wolf Lake up in the Kawarthas, yes, and all of a sudden my phone went boop blink, which is weird because I usually turn it off.
Yeah.
But so I look who's texting me here, and it was Mike saying, "Hey, I'm." Got this and stuff.
Yeah.
Text Derek. He's home. I'm unfortunately up north in the middle of a lake right now.
Yeah, I got to meet his brother. He's just lives 10, 12 minutes away from my house, north of me. And so I drove up there and met them both and chatted for like half hour, 40 minutes. And so it was kind of cool. It was nice to meet
him. If I
knew
he was going
to
be around, I would have told him to join us up north for the day.
Yeah, I could have done a canoe trip or something with him. Yeah, yeah. That would have been nice. Yeah, I didn't know he was back from Newfoundland.
No,
until I was standing in Tim Hortons and my message went off. It's like, oh,
well, hello. Yes, I have time to come and get beer from you.
You have. I was excited about the logs.
You have logs.
You have logs. I can't believe you got the logs.
Awesome. Well, like I say, while I was while you were busy getting beer.
Yes.
I was 2 hours north.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Wolf Lake in the Kawartha Highlands. Took the new Nova Craft Prospector out for a paddle. Buddy John Brower joined the fun. He's got a new to him Eskiff Echo. So he wanted to try that one out as well. He just got that. Athena came along for the day because you can't try out your new boat without your canoe dog.
Your water dog, yeah.
Right? She's awesome in the canoe, except for the fact that she thinks all canoes should be paddling right next to each other. She gets a bit whiny when if there's two people in the boat and her, she's fine. If there's me and her, she's fine. She sees somebody else in the canoe paddling with us and they start veering away from us. She's always watching
them. You're losing them.
Yeah, well, she's always watching them and starting to whine when they get too far away. It's like, oh, good Lord. We left home about 6:30 a.m., got on the water by 9-ish. The sun was just up when we got on the water. Free parking at the access point from November 1st.
Nice.
Woohoo! It's always a good price. Free. No.
Which is why we didn't visit the boys, because we would have had to get a campsite.
Well, funny you should mention that, because today, 4 days late, they answered my email saying, you don't need a parking pass for a day trip. Yet the girl I called, because they hadn't got back to me, we don't have permits, so you have to reserve a campsite for $14.02 a person plus fees.
Yeah.
So basically at the end of the day, you want me to pay $40 to park my vehicle
for a few hours.
For a few hours.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
So we went to this other place that said it was just like $14 to park. Mm-hmm. And then we got there and there was a sign that said, free parking. Yes.
Okay, deal.
So, yeah, so that worked out well. Day started out damp, cold, and overcast. It looked like it was going to snow again. And that's one of those days you're like, I made plans to go, and I look at the weather, and I don't really want to go, but I do want to go. So, but I mean, you get the dry suit and everything underneath and stuff. I plan to use my GoPros to do some video, but they were not having any of that.
Oh,
fully
yes.
charged batteries, yeah. recording for 30 seconds and shutting off because of a dead battery. Was not happy. Not happy.
Well, and I've heard this from so many people. It's like any inclement weather, if it gets too cold, GoPro batteries just don't seem to want to work.
Well, see, and I've had the opposite, where if it's getting way too hot during the day, they start having issues. But, I mean, no batteries, you know, as a general rule, the colder it gets, the less your batteries work. Right?
Yeah.
So I brought my GoPros home, and I said, you know what? I totally reformatted my SD cards, recharged all my batteries again, totally factory reset my GoPros, totally reset them.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to see if that works. Upgraded the firmware and everything in them. So I'll see if all that works and if that makes a difference. Maybe there was just... Now, I did notice that there's the vibration control, shake control setting that you can have on it.
Oh, yeah.
When I took that off, they weren't messing up as much.
Oh.
But when I had that on, it had issues turning on and off, recording, and the screen would all mm-hmm. flicker. But when I took that off, that seemed... So I'm going to try these out again. Without that controls on.
Yeah.
And see if that makes a difference. But everything's basically like new out of the box now. So we'll see.
Yeah.
Wolf Lake is a nice lake. It's not too big, but it's an access lake that leads to other lakes.
I've been down it a couple times.
Yeah. We did a slow paddle up the lake, or I guess down the lake. We weren't pressed for time for the day and that sort of thing. We didn't have any real destination in mind. Took a peek at some of the cottages as we passed. Dry suits, when you're paddling in them, are noisy.
Yes.
Just saying.
Crinkle, wrinkle, especially just, cold.
Well, you're sitting there trying to enjoy the paddle and you're having a nice, you know, quiet paddle. And all you're hearing is this
yep.
of your dry suit rubbing and stuff. So then you stop paddling so that you can listen to the nice quiet. And then you're not making any headway. So anyway, just saying. Athena had to make sure, like I say, she knew where John was at all time. And if he was getting too far away, she would start whining. She does sit in the boat rather well. And just if he ends up behind us or in front of us and then switches sides, she just like, pivots.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Right? So her butt is slowly moving,
yeah.
you know, in a circle sort of thing as the day goes on, or depending on where he was.
Yeah.
You go down the lake and there's a portage into Crab Lake. It's only 140-meter portage. Pretty easy. There's a couple of rocks and roots, but you can almost do it with a cart if you really needed to. We walk the portage, take a peek, and stretch the legs. Look, Crab looks like a nice, beautiful lake. Plenty of campsites on it. Great for a weekend trip or a 3-day trip. If you just wanted you know, an access lake and then one small portage in to where there's lots of other sites and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And you get your choice of sites. Really a nice looking lake. So something to keep in mind for next summer. After we, you know, he said, checked it out, took a little walk up back to the canoes, jumped back in, paddled back up Wolf Lake, and we're going to head to a campsite not far from the parking lot, but there was actually somebody on it.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So
yeah.
When we looked before, there's no... The two sites that are on the lake, none were booked, and I guess somebody had booked the site.
Okay.
I assume somebody had booked the
site. Or they had lunch like you guys did.
No, they were set up.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, they were fully set up, so... So we headed back down the lake... towards Crab again. There was another site there. And we got there, pulled out, got out, grabbed our gear, got out of our dry suits, started a fire in the fire pit and had lunch, because you don't want to be sitting in your dry suit by a fire when a spark comes out and burns a hole through your dry suit. That's a bit of an expensive.
And then there's a whole bunch of gosh darn it.
Oh, yes. Oh, golly gee whiz.
Golly gee whiz. I got a burn hole in my dry suit.
Dag nabbit.
Gosh darn it.
Those are the words we would be using 100% for sure. As there's that big hole in your dry suit leg or something. Yes. Athena got to run around for a bit there. She loves just, she gets the zoomies in the woods that, eh? And then she stops and she's staring at something. No one knows what she's staring at. And then, boom, she's gone the other direction. Yeah. And then she stops, and she's staring at something.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're a freak dog.
Well, it's all exciting for dogs, right?
A couple cottages nearby, but you wouldn't know it except for the one had a dog barking, which, you know, kept her attention.
And some of the cottages on that lake on Wolf Lake are nice cottages.
The ones we saw, yeah, there was a couple nice ones. But a lot of them were still regular old cottages, nothing really special.
Okay.
But you know, if somebody were to buy one, the first thing they would do is tear it down and build a bigger one. That just seems to be the way it gets done nowadays. Mm-hmm. Day cleared up. Sun came out. There was very little clouds in the sky. Warmed up a few degrees. It turned into a really, really nice paddling day. Like I say, sitting at the around the campfire, feet up on the sites there on the lakes and the Kawarthas have picnic tables.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So we brought our little chairs, little Helinox style chairs.
Yeah.
And set the, I'm just going to set this up next to the fire and put my feet up on the picnic table, warm my toes a bit, relax some, and dog ended up having a snooze. We were just chit chatting, shooting the breeze and stuff like that. And had our lunch, and it was really nice. A perfect fall paddling weather day. Stayed for a while there, chatting and, you know, all that sort of stuff. And then we ended up saying, you know what? Got to clean everything up, pack our gear, got back into our dry suits, and headed back down to the canoes. Did a couple of photos and stuff. It's annoying. So I'm going to say this. Dry suits have their purpose. But it is annoying getting in and out of them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, we're sitting there. Okay, well, it's like a kilometer maybe to the truck. No, we got to put them on because the water is. And you're like,
yeah.
You know, it comes a point where it really wouldn't have been that hard to convince me not to put it back on. But having said that, after using it as much as I have over the last few years, like the neck gaskets like loosened a bit, so it's not just choking me off.
Oh, okay,
the wrist gaskets, you know.
It's getting a bit more comfortable.
It's a lot more comfortable than it was. So yeah, it's not that bad of a deal. Just making sure that the zipper's lubed up so that slides nice, and I got to get a bigger pair of footwear for it.
Oh, okay.
Because the Astrals, they fit, but just.
Did you stick your hands in the water? How cold was the water?
It was cold.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So basically, if you said, hey, let's go for a swim, I go, I'll race you, and you would be running all fast.
And you'd look
behind
me,
and I'd be running the other way. That's how cold it was, Derek. If you jumped in and you stood up and started screaming, I'd be on shore pointing and laughing. Yeah, that's how cold it was. Like I say, perfect fall paddling. We got to the site there. We're packing up there. Guesstimated there was about an hour and 15 minutes. We do the finger method.
Oh, yeah.
Where you hold up four fingers for a net from the horizon, and that's an hour. And then I held up another finger, and that reached the bottom of the sun.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an hour and 15 minutes,
right?
So, yeah, I figured an hour and 15 minutes till the sun went down. So I jumped in the boats, paddled back up the lake, back to the truck, loaded the two canoes on top, all the gear into the truck, and off we went just as it was getting dark.
Nice.
So basically, we paddled from just after first light to just before sundown.
First light, first dark.
Right? So, yeah, and driving home in the dark. Yeah, it was pretty good.
Excellent.
Yep. Saw a few flocks of ducks throughout the day. We think they were buffleheads.
I don't even know what
they're
that is.
They're like white and black ducks. But yeah, they're weird looking ducks. But they weren't regular ducks. They weren't loons. They weren't anything else. And I do know their buffleheads do the migrating thing about now. So
yeah.
And they're in Ontario. So that's the only thing. Even John had his video and he zoomed in a bit. And he says he really couldn't tell, but that's what he kind of thought too.
Oh, okay.
So, like I say, one of the purposes of going, besides getting out for the day and freezing my bahuki off, was to paddle the Novacraft Prospector 16, and it was great. No problems at all. You definitely can feel the weight of it after, if you've been paddling a lightweight, super lightweight canoes so for
so
long.
Just paddling it felt
different. And then just paddling it, you can feel the difference in weight. But
what about... So the weight would be the same if you had a full pack in the canoe with you. Like if you had a lightweight canoe and a full pack.
Well, I had a pack in. Okay. I brought pack plus some things for weight just in case.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I wanted to get a feel for the boat, how it would be. But it wasn't an issue.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not moving as fast as you're going in a lightweight canoe.
Yeah.
But you're not being left in the dust either. Mm-hmm. Right? John had a small pack in his. And, yeah, we were bopping back and forth. You know, he'd be in the lead, I'd be in the lead, that sort of deal.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
His Eskif Echo there was, it's a bit shorter, and it's like a solo canoe.
Okay.
So, plus I had an 80-pound furry piece of weight in there, too. I definitely had more weight in the canoe.
Yeah.
But, no, I mean, if you know how to paddle a boat, you know, paddle a canoe there with your... the proper strokes and everything like that,
yeah,
you're not having an issue. Mm-hmm. It doesn't track as well as my other canoes.
Well, but it's designed not to necessarily.
It turns really well.
Handles well
right?
in white water.
It really, and that's the thing is, they said if you got the 17-footer, it would track better,
yes.
But it'd suck in white water.
Yes.
Or it wouldn't suck, but it wouldn't be as maneuverable.
Exactly, yeah.
The 16-footer is more maneuverable. And I was doing some twists and turns out in the lake there. And yeah, it's definitely not an issue. Not an issue whatsoever. Athena could move around in it and you didn't feel like you were going to tip over.
Okay.
Until she decides that she's going to stand all her weight on one side of the boat and lean over to get a drink of water. And then you've got to, you know, shift your weight to the other side.
That's
to
hilarious.
Counterbalance. Yeah. It's like, yeah, she doesn't quite understand that part. And she doesn't care if she goes in. I brought the canoe pole just in case there was a chance to use it, but we didn't get a chance, unfortunately.
Yeah, the water's pretty deep around there.
Yeah, I figure there's some spots around the islands that might be shallow because there's a lot of shoals through there too, right?
Yeah.
So I figure maybe there was an area that's going to be a bit shallow and there wasn't. But I did stand up in it. And gave it a little, you know, and rock back and forth and really sturdy. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't be an issue. I think it'll be a good canoe pulling boat.
She had leaned over. Like, what was the secondary stability like?
Good. Yeah. Really good. Yep. Yep.
Excellent.
Yep. I was happy with it for the day of paddling. I think it'll be getting some good use in the future. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Now, like I say, I'm maybe going to call it rock hugger. lots of rocks in the rivers.
Yeah.
I'm going to hug them all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think I'll be happy with that in white water and especially with the canoe pulling thing.
Yes.
You know, I think it'll be pretty good. So all in all, another great day on the water.
Mm-hmm.
Nice fall paddling
right
day.
On.
You know, you don't, as much as you hate getting everything all ready and it's yucky outside and it's damp and it looks like it's going to snow or rain. You do it, and then all those clouds disappear, and it's a blue sky. The sun's beating down, and it really makes for a really nice day.
Hmm.
Especially, and I'm not usually one that if I'm going for a day trip, I'll stop on a site to have lunch if there's an empty site.
Yeah.
But I don't really think about making a campfire and,
yeah, I tend
and doing
not to
all
either.
That. Yeah. I know there's a lot of people that go out there for the day trip and they bring their jet boil or whatever mm-hmm. and make a coffee or a tea or whatever when they're out there. And it's like
part of their process.
Yeah. It's like, you know what? I'm just going out there paddling. I'll stop somewhere, have some water, stretch my legs, grab some lunch sort
stare
of deal.
Stare at some ducks.
Stare at some ducks, let the dog run, that sort of thing. Hmm. Get back in the boat, skedaddle.
Yeah.
Half the time, I just sit in the boat, let it drift, and
eat
my lunch and drink, right? So, drink water, that is.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, yeah.
Great.
I think, and you haven't been out yours yet, but I think you'll...
No, I haven't.
You'll like it.
Excellent.
Yeah. What we got, like we say, we're talking winter. Got our first snowfall. Mm-hmm. Everything's going to start freezing soon.
Yep.
And I came across this article by Cheryl Kohlberg. And we've talked a little bit about this years ago.
We've mentioned the event, but
In Quebec, ice canoeing turns frozen rivers into adventure playgrounds. So she does this from her point of view, this article. Said, kneeling with my left padded knee on the seat of the canoe, I gripped the side rails tightly with my gloved hands. Simultaneously, I pushed off the chunky ice below with my right foot, using a cleated shoe that created traction against the frozen ground. It's a process called scootering. And together, four of us worked to propel our 300-pound canoe across the ice until we reached frigid water. Quickly jumped into the canoe, grabbed our oars, and sliced through the water to keep our momentum going. My cheeks were pink from the biting wind, but the exertion kept me warm. 300-pound canoe.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a portaging canoe.
No.
Luckily, I was with a professional who knew how to navigate over and around the sheets of ice and through the open water of the St. Lawrence River in Quebec City, Canada. Our guide and captain, Maxime Gillard, would call out the conditions from the back of the canoe as he was the only one facing forward. Ice everywhere was something we heard more than a few times. So they're rowing these, so they're backwards.
Yep.
Rowing. And then he's facing the front, so he's telling you where to go.
He's guiding them. Go left, go right.
Gillard was first introduced to the ice canoeing in college at the University of Quebec in Rimouski. As an experienced slalom kayaker in his native country of France, he quickly fell in love with the physical and mental challenge that ice canoeing provided. He competed for 3 years before deciding it would be fun to share the tradition with tourists. See, this is the part that we didn't talk about before, is now, thinking as a tourist, you can do this. He began guiding with Canoe à Glace Experience. It translates to ice canoe experience. I wanted to share my passion with other people, he says, to help them not just discover ice canoeing, but even like it. The activity is real physical. You always have to think and find the best way to go through the St. Lawrence. Gillard picked up the sport in college, but company founder Julian Harvey is a third-generation ice canoeist, growing up on Île aux Coudes, an island in the middle of the St. Lawrence River. Ice canoeing was a way of life. Yes, yeah, that's not something that I would really...
But if you grew up on in remote areas and on the islands or whatever, it could potentially be, depending on the winter, your only method to travel.
Yeah. Before me, my father and grandfather made their way across the ice, says Harvey. I felt called to continue the tradition. Eventually, he ended up spending 10 years competing at the highest levels around eastern Canada.
Wow.
Harvey's family has been ice canoeing for decades, but the sport in Quebec dates back thousands of years. As with many indigenous cultures, canoes were an essential form of transportation in Quebec. The first ice canoes were made of birch tree bark and allowed indigenous people to travel between communities when the river would turn to ice. French settlers arrived in Quebec in the 1600s and made ice canoes from spruce wood, a material that made them sturdier and reduced friction on the ice. This allowed them to cross the river from Quebec City to places like Île d'Orléans and Lévis to transport mail, go to the doctor, and buy and sell goods. Now, when we talked about it before, there was the race that went across and basically to the island and back.
Yes.
And it was a, basically, that's the route they used to take to deliver the mail.
Yes.
So that was how the race started, was to follow that same sort of route.
The Canadian version of the Pony Express.
Right. For years, wooden ice canoes were used to ferry passengers to points along the river, but by the late 1800s, canoe shuttles waned as steam-powered ferries that could break through ice took passengers to ports along the St. Lawrence shoreline. Harvey adds that in his grandfather's era, when the ferries would break down, canoes were still used. Back then, only men commandeered the canoes. They were perceived as heroes because they were able to maintain that connection to the mainland, which was especially hard with the conditions on the river in the winter. Quebec's first winter carnival took place in 1894 and featured a canoe race from Quebec to Lévis, as depicted in photos from the Quebec National Archives. In 1955, the carnival became an annual event, and ice canoe racing, including both men and women, became a major attraction. We should really go. You go to you like to take your family to Quebec.
Yeah,
and
we do. I used to go. I've been to Carnival a couple times growing up, and we're probably going to go to Quebec again next summer. So we do like going there.
You just don't do it in the winter anymore.
No, not as much. Not as much.
You need to do it in the winter. Go mm-hmm. there and take pictures and tell me how it was.
So there's, like, I remember going as a kid. It was a school trip, and we would steal the trays from restaurants and go sliding down streets on the serving trays.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you take anything to slide on. Yeah. Green garbage bag, thick green garbage bags. We used to put it wear like a potato sack.
Yeah.
And then slide down hills. Mm-hmm. Do you remember super sliders and carpets, yeah. toboggans, you name it.
But yeah, it's quite, Carnival in Quebec, it's a big event. Bonhomme Carnival is their mascot, and they do the cracked ice, which is the, you wear hockey skates and you do these luge-type courses on hockey skates.
Yep.
So it's a lot of fun. The Quebecers know how to have fun in the winter.
Mm-hmm. These days, the canoes are made from fiberglass, making them lighter and more durable. Yeah, because 300 pounds is light. Between December and February, many highly skilled ice canoe athletes travel around the province of Quebec to compete in races on the St. Lawrence River from Montreal to Île aux Coudes, winning requiring not only strength and endurance, but an in-depth knowledge of weather, tides, currents, and various types of ice. You'd have to know all of that.
Yeah.
As we continued our excursion on the ice-choked St. Lawrence, the below-freezing water lightly splashed my face with each pull of the oar through the river. With Gallard's coaching, we pulled onto a large slab of ice, and he yelled, "Stop, stop, stop." He told us we could get out of the canoe for chocolat chaud time, and began handing out cups of hot cocoa. So you're in the middle of the St. Lawrence in a boat
on an ice floe,
drinking hot chocolate.
and the current is slowly taking you out to sea.
All right.
In the Gulf of St. Lawrence.
Though it felt like we were on stable ground, we were, in fact, perched on a piece of ice drifting with the current of the river. I was amazed at the different shapes, sizes, transparencies, and configurations of the frozen water. Each one seemed intricate and unique, like a floating art gallery. Some had sharp edges, while others were smooth and rounded. Some were solid white, others crystal clear. Experiencing the waters from the perspective was completely different than seeing it from high above on the ferry. It was harsh, cold, and exhausting, but so serene and beautiful. In 2019, Harvey turned his passion into a profession with the founding of Canoe à Glace Experience to share his love of the sport with the public. It's a wonderful way to continue my family legacy one winter at a time, says Harvey, and it's a great way to connect with winter to see how people in Quebec once lived. His is the only company that offers a chance for the general public to try the immersive sport. So see, that's what we ought to do. We got to get a couple of more goobers like us. And take the drive.
Yeah, just spend a weekend. And give it a whirl. Take a long weekend and, yeah, that'd be great.
Right?
There'd be a lot of stuff we'd go there. We went during during Carnival and then...
Nah, I wouldn't do it during Carnival.
Oh, it's a blast.
No, I know, but I'd do it just to go try this.
Yeah, you could do that too.
Right?
Yeah, keep it simple.
He says, we wanted to take an intense activity and make it accessible and fun. The ice canoeing season, which is only about 3 months long, seems far too short for those that are passionate about the sport, and he wants to make more and more people passionate about being out on the winter or the water in winter. Ice canoeing is really a really funky activity that makes you forget, if you don't like winter, that you're in it, he says. And when you love ice canoeing, you're sad when the ice begins to melt. Now, remember, I'm the one that put out the little feelers going, hey, who wants to go stand up with a pole in a canoe and go down some rapids?
Yeah.
How many goobers said yes?
Quite a few.
Right?
Yeah.
So this should be nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? King of the goobers, baby.
It's a bit more complicated. It is wintertime, and it is a longer drive than going to Guelph. But yeah.
Pish-posh. After our time in the frozen river, we defrosted in an outdoor wooden sauna on the Canoe à Glace grounds. Having spent roughly 2 hours traveling somewhere between 4 and 6 miles downriver, from the sauna we had epic views of the harsh environment we had successfully conquered as a team. My experience lasted only half a day, though there are packages available that include ice canoeing plus access to nearby Strom Nordic Spa. Yeah, spas aren't really my cup of tea.
No, mine neither.
My first time ice canoeing was thrilling, exhausting, and inspiring. It provided an immersive experience that allowed me to embrace the beauty of winter in a place where many others can't get past the cold. Although I love winter, I still prefer paddling in the warm waters of Hawaii. But I now have first-hand knowledge of the fierce dedication and courage it takes to brave the icy waters and greatly admire those who do.
Very cool. I want to do that.
Right? That sounds like we've talked. Great until you fall in.
Yeah.
But.
Well, you're obviously going to have a dry suit.
Yep.
Right? We've talked about this before. It's like, oh, that's really cool. That's really neat. I didn't know that there was experience packages you could.
No. He's the only ones, right?
Yeah.
2019. So.
6 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Maybe we just go call Harvey and say, pal, buddy, friend of ours.
Because back when we talked about it last, we talked about it as we talked about the races and the races that people do and all this stuff. Because it's quite the competitive.
Yeah.
It's all over the eastern areas there, especially in Quebec and along the St. Lawrence Seaway. It's a slow-moving river. It's a wide river. Yep. So you get the slow-moving ice flows. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I didn't realize it's as big as it really is.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. So there's more than just a couple
it's
of weirdos
televised,
out there.
It's not televised, I don't think.
No.
The crashed ice is the one that gets all the television. And
yeah, going downhill on the hockey skates over there, bumps and lumps and weaves and trying to kill each other or not kill each other, one of the two. Not really sure.
Yeah.
So if you're thinking about heading to Quebec this winter, you might want to check that out.
Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's a bunch of people out there that want to join us.
Goobers, unite!
We should plan it.
We should plan something. So where are you going this weekend? Well, let me tell you. You know, that's it. You come back to work. So what'd you do this weekend? Okay, so I went to Quebec, right? Oh, did you go to the old district? No. So we went down the harbor, okay? Now stick with me on this. So there's this 300-pound boat, and we all push it out into the ice floe.
Into the river.
Into the river. And we're running on the ice,
into
the water.
Freezing cold.
Yeah. You know, at some point they're going, okay, I shouldn't have asked. I really shouldn't have asked.
Did anybody die?
Right? No, but wait.
There's more.
There's more. And then we're in the middle of the lake, the St. Lawrence Seaway there.
And we had chocolate.
On a light float,
hot chocolate.
And we had hot chocolate. Dude pulls hot chocolate out of I don't know where. That'd be awesome, right?
Oh, it would. Absolutely.
Yeah. And then people are walking by your office. Hey, Sean, don't ask. Don't, for the love of God, don't ask. Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I get that thing. Where'd you go this week? Oh, yeah, we went canoeing up in the Kawarth. Yeah, it started out damp, cold, and overcast, and just, and I was told today, well, you're the one that chose, made that choice.
Yes.
Yes, I did.
Yes, I did.
good times. We don't like to get political, so we're going to try not to here.
And it's funny, like, every time this comes up, it's the wind is blowing in a different direction on this topic.
Right.
And so it's like, the winds have changed again.
Yes. there's a new bill that could permanently alter how the Boundary Waters border with Canada is patrolled. These are the topics that you kind of said there. Should we talk about this?
I know. But, you know, we can keep it, just keep it dry and keep it to
the facts. It's information. We're throwing the information out there.
Yeah.
Republican Senator Mike Lee of Utah, which, first off, he's way over there.
I know. He's not even near Boundary Waters.
He's not even near Boundary Waters. Unless Utah moved.
Not
that I know of. Can they do that? recently introduced a Borderlands Conservation Act, which would allow the federal government to expand border patrol operations using tactical infrastructure and surveillance systems.
That's a mouthful, isn't it?
Right?
Tactical infrastructure.
And surveillance systems.
Hmm.
Wilderness advocates argue the bill would undo protections established by the Wilderness Act, and they vow to fight it. Congress passed the Wilderness Act in 1964 to protect undeveloped federal lands such as the Boundary Waters. The act defines wilderness as a place that is without permanent improvements or human habitation, which is protected and managed so as to preserve its natural conditions.
Yeah.
Now, Senator Lee's Borderlands Conservation Act threatens to alter the landscape and change how visitors experience this place. His bill would give the Department of Homeland Security broader access to federal lands, including wilderness areas. The area includes land within 100 miles of the northern and southern borders of the United States and encompasses the entire Boundary Waters, Voyageur National Park, as well as all of the Superior National Forest. If Congress advances the bill, Homeland Security could build new infrastructure and install surveillance along the border. This would include tactical infrastructure such as observation points, remote video systems, motion sensors, vehicle barriers, fences, roads, bridges, drainage structures, and other detection devices.
Huh.
In keeping with the wilderness ethic, the Boundary Waters currently has no roads, bridges, or fences. Under a mutual agreement between the U.S. and Canada, citizens of both countries can share the portages and waterways directly along the border of the Boundary Waters. Just to the west is the water landscape of Voyageurs National Park. If you look at a map, it's clear that most of the 200 miles between the two consists of water.
It's a very remote area.
How many, you got to think, if somebody's trying to cross the border illegally.
It's tough.
How many of them are going that route? Seriously, going to go that route?
There's much easier places to cross.
Yes. Quetico Provincial Park, another million-acre wilderness, borders the north side of Boundary Waters. It also attracts wilderness paddlers. Handful of modest ranger stations line the international border, two on the U.S. side, three on the Canadian side. They allow travelers with valid permits and passports to cross between the two countries. There are other subtle indications of the boundary. While paddling international waters, careful observers can also spot the occasional small metal markers cemented into the rocks that indicate the border. because of all the natural barriers, crossing the border illegally through the terrain would be extremely difficult without wilderness survival skills. And at that point, if you do make it, you deserve it.
Well, honestly, if there's going to be somebody doing something illegal, they're not going to have very good... If you're the type that's going to do something like that, I doubt you're going to have wilderness survival skills.
Right? Right? And it's not like it's a quick couple hour
oh, no.
doodly-doodly over.
Yeah, it's going to take a week.
Yeah. Representative Pete Stauber of Minnesota's 8th District, which includes all of the SNF, Superior National Forest, supports the bill. He says the Biden administration's border policies led to left-behind trash, human waste, illegal trails, and abandoned campfires.
I don't know about the veracity of that.
Okay, Biden had nothing to do with that up here, and it happens up here.
Yeah, exactly.
Screw you, Biden. apparently, he's causing these problems all the way up to Tamagami and Algonquin. Stauber believes the legislation were to pass, it would prevent similar problems from happening in the boundary waters.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. Wilderness advocates strongly disagree. Pete Marshall with Friends of the Boundary Waters told that the bill appears to be Senator Lee's attempt to gut the Wilderness Act, reduce public land protections, or do away with public lands altogether.
See, and the key thing I think here for people to think about is there's a lot of area that's currently off and on protected from mining.
Mm-hmm.
And they just canceled some of the mining in that area and they want to restore it. There's like some copper mines and so on that they want to start developing in the boundary waters. And I think that's what they're trying to get.
If you get rid of public lands.
Yeah.
It's one step closer.
Yeah.
Furthermore, Senator Tina Smith has also voiced concern, warning that the bill could cause irreversible environmental harm. She says Americans want to see our public lands protected, but Senator Lee's bill overwrites important protections in the original Wilderness Act that could result in serious harm to our wild places, including the boundary waters. The boundary waters is one of the country's great natural treasures. Boundary Waters covers 1.1 million acres of northern Minnesota. It is the largest wilderness area east of the Rocky Mountains. Proposed changes could have lasting impacts not only on the wilderness itself, but also on the surrounding national forest.
Mm-hmm.
So something to think about.
Yeah, and we don't have a stick in this fire, but we do have concerns.
We have a lot of concerns and a lot of people that share our
Concerns.
Our concerns. There's a lot of people that share our interests that this would affect.
Mm-hmm.
So all we could do is voice the concerns. And, I mean, the American people would have a bigger voice than we do up here.
Oh, obviously,
you know. So we can only put the information out there as we see it.
Yep.
On a better note, a more friendly note, Hugo Foley, nobody knows who he is, says it was an epic surprise when a dolphin joined their group as they paddled under the Forth Bridge in South Queens Ferry, Edinburgh. Footage shows the dolphin swimming between kayaks and inspecting their paddles while the group looked on.
Yeah.
You can Google Derek the Dolphin Kayakers.
Yes, good name for a dolphin.
Right?
Now, it's funny, eh? Like, the dolphin's probably going, what kind of flippers does this guy have? Because he's looking at the paddles, just swimming close and curious.
Hugo says the dolphin swam around them for 15 to 20 minutes. He says that it was his first experience like it, despite paddling there regularly. Says, we usually spot seals when we are there, but never a dolphin. It was quite incredible, really. We thought we could just see it for 2 minutes and it would be off. But the dolphin was really curious about us and just spent 15 minutes interacting with the group. It was very playful. The whole thing was just immense. It was just epic.
Mm-hmm.
Hugo, who's been in Scotland for 12 years and co-founded water sports company Driftwood Adventure, posted a video onto social media, which has received a lot of attention. From the post, he discovered that the dolphin is very popular with locals and has been nicknamed Derek.
What a great name.
And that is the only reason I got this post. I'm going to start calling you Derek the Dolphin.
Derek Dolphin.
He adds, it seems to be a bit of a celebrity to the Dolphin. When we posted online, a lot of the locals had commented saying that it was Derek the Dolphin. He is quite well known and well liked around the area. Dolphins, whales, and porpoises are protected by law. It is an offense to intentionally approach or recklessly disturb these animals. Government guidance, which we talked about a few episodes back, on what to do when encountering a dolphin is to slow down, stay at least 100 meters away, never encircle them, do not touch or feed them. Derek the Dolphin. But yeah, if you watch the video, he's just bopping around. He's rolling under the, yeah, looking up at the kayaks. He's taking quite interest in someone's pink paddle.
Yeah.
Just the blade, mm-hmm, you know, because it's underwater. So he's taking, you know, guys trying to paddle away. And Derek just, yeah, comes on up and, hey, like you say, what's that? So, but that'd be cool though, right? Just sitting there and, yeah, this dolphin is just,
yeah,
going to town all around you for like 15, 20 minutes.
Reminds me of the old show Flipper.
Flipper. Yeah, there's that's marking your age, buddy. I don't think I ever watched Flipper.
Yeah?
Yeah. No, I don't think I got to. There's a lot of those shows. We were living way up like Moosonee and stuff like that,
oh,
at,
okay,
the time,
yeah,
where we didn't get to sit down and watch Leave It to Beaver, The Partridge Family.
Yeah.
Flip. We saw some, like, we lost a lot of, saw a lot of stuff after, yeah, its heyday, sort of thing.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So all those ones everybody talks about, Brady Bunch and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Like, no, Leave It to Beaver. Yeah, we never saw that. Bewitched. Yeah, that was all. We all saw that in reruns.
When
we moved down to the Moors.
Yeah. We didn't get a lot of, same thing in New Brunswick. We had a French CBC and English CBC growing up. And we'd watch Beachcombers and,
yep,
and Circle Square Ranch and cartoons. Obviously, Saturday mornings, cartoons.
Saturday morning, cereal, yep, toast, whatever, breakfast in front of the TV watching, yep, cartoons.
And what was it? Every Sunday it was World of Disney or...
A Wonderful World of Disney. Wonderful
World of Disney.
Beachcombers, yeah, and Carol Burnett.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and now we have this plethora of... of mind-numbing entertainment.
Well, that stuff was mind-numbing too, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But it was entertaining.
Yeah.
You know, but now I'm getting so tired of movies being redone.
I know.
They
I
are,
know.
As much as I like Henry Cavill,
so
they're redoing The Highlander.
I've seen the preview of it. It looks like they're going to do a good go of it.
They shouldn't still, be doing a go
I
of it
know,
at all.
I know, I know.
There is one Highlander. There can only be one. And it was done back in the day.
Yeah.
They don't need to. It's like Flash. They redid, was it Flashdance? Not Flashdance. What was the one with Kevin Bacon, the dancing one?
Footloose.
They redid Footloose.
Did they?
Why?
Did they redo,
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah. A few years back.
Oh,
there's
remember.
No reason for it.
Yeah.
No reason for it.
Well, there's been a
if
lot of...
If you can't come up with an original idea, get out of Hollywood.
Yeah, they got condemned for trying to do it with Princess Bride. We're way off topic now.
Yeah.
But yeah, they got dragged.
You want to get me going, buddy. Yeah, you can't redo...
Yeah.
Why don't you just redo the Rocky Horror Picture Show?
I know, right?
Right?
Yeah. Stop remaking.
Stop it.
Be creative.
Get out of Hollywood. Now, mind you, they are doing Spaceballs 2.
Yes.
Right?
A lot of the originals.
But it is part 2. It is not a redo.
Exactly.
Sequels are good.
And so Rick Moranis has not done anything since his wife passed. He's raised his, mm-hmm, children diligently and stayed away from shows, movies, Hollywood. And they finally got him to come out of retirement to do Spaceballs 2.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's exciting.
It's going to be good.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway.
Yeah. Paddling.
After that tirade. Yeah. Derek the Dolphin. Way to be, buddy. That's all I've got this week.
So how did you, for getting the coup on and off the truck, like you're probably starting to get used to it now. Is it heavy, awkward?
Oh, heck yes.
It's also slippery. So just because of the plastic.
Did
you give it a good drag across the gravel?
No.
No.
No. The fact that I've been dealing with a sore hip since July.
Oh, okay.
So when I'm trying to lift that myself over my head, it's just excruciating.
Oh, okay.
But trying to lift a 100-pound canoe over your head to put on the top of a full-sized Ford F-150 pickup truck. Yeah. And, of course, you get the roof racks are a bit taller.
Yes.
So you're trying to put it up on there. Yeah, that's not...
A little bit difficult.
Yeah. So, yeah, John... We put John's canoe on top of my truck as well. So I got it all ready to go, loaded up my truck, and then he just showed up. We picked it up and threw it up on top of the truck, tied everything down, threw his up on top, tied it down, and boop, off to the races.
Perfect.
Yeah. So, yeah. Now, I do have... The Yakima goalpost. Not to be the Thule T.
Yeah.
Mine's the actual goalpost that comes up and splits like a letter Y and has the bar between. There's a pin at the bottom that you can pull out. Yeah,
you can tilt it down.
And it tilts all the way back. So you can just put the front
on that from the ground.
Then you push the boat up. So then the front of your boat, supposedly... You're able to control it. That should land on your roof racks, and you just slide the whole thing forward. You put the pin in, and it... But I know I tried it once with one of my older canoes when I first got it.
Oh, okay. Be awkward.
I was graceful as a dead gazelle, and the front of the canoe came slamming down on the hood before, or the roof before it even touched the roof rack.
Oops.
So there's a... if anything, I would stand in...
The bed.
The bed?
Yes.
Pull up the tailgate and then grab the canoe and pull it up. And that would be so much easier.
So
there is a way to do it by yourself.
Yeah, I was thinking about that myself because, again, I have to consider the logistics because it is a heavier canoe. But so at 90, estimated 94 pounds, I could go and slide it up just... I usually walk up to the side of the vehicle and toss it up on the rack.
Car.
I know, but it's still, I don't want to damage the car.
Your car is probably 3 feet shorter than my truck.
But still, it's a heavy canoe. It's awkward.
Oh, I could do it one-handed on your car.
Oh, whatever. Whatever.
Oh, it would definitely be easy. Well, that's the thing is if you have it on your shoulders and you can just plop the front on the front bar.
Yeah.
And then you walk backwards and then shimmy the back end over, that's fine. But it's when you've got to raise the whole thing up, then it becomes very unstable.
Yeah.
And you're looking at and hitting people, things, cars next to you, that sort
of thing. Well, and that brings up another point is, let's be honest, the worst part of the hardest part to take of mounting anything on the roof of your vehicle is the embarrassment of shame and of doing it wrong if somebody happens to be watching.
Do you need help with that? Oh, no, I got it. But he didn't have it. Yeah. No, but I mean, if I'm doing whitewater stuff, chances are I'm not going alone anyway.
True.
Yeah. So somebody's probably going to be there to help put it on or whatever. Yeah. But like I say, I can also, like I say, pull the pin, let the goalpost backwards, slip the front end on and just pull it straight up. I'll get the hang of that. No problems.
You have to take a whitewater course now.
Right? I know what whitewater looks like. It's all foamy and frothy.
Yeah.
Oh. I finally finished Hap's book.
Oh, how was it?
River of Fire. It's actually good. There's a couple things that happen in it that never get answered.
Oh.
Well, one thing. I actually sent him a message. on I'm not going to tell you what it is, but at the end of the book, you're like, well, what happened to...
So-and-so, or what happened to this event?
Incident? Yeah, and what happened? And so I sent half a message. Love the book. Just finished reading. It took me way longer just because I ran out of time, and so I'd read part of it, and then wouldn't have time to pick it up again for a little bit, not because I'm a slow reader. But I sent a message going, okay, so out of curiosity... And I asked him a question. He says, don't know. Some of them.
I don't know the answer to that either.
I don't know.
But you're the author.
Yeah, yeah. Pick it up, read it. It's a good one. It's based on a true story that they took an expedition down the Seal River.
Okay.
Back in 1994.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, good book. Check it out. I don't know if I've read... Dance of the Dead Man by Hap Wilson is just getting a second printing, too.
Oh, okay.
It's that popular. Yeah. I read that one before this one and really enjoyed that. That one's really cool, based on historical facts.
Yeah.
And he draws some conclusions and bases the facts and some conclusions, and he builds a story around it, sort of thing. So that was a really cool book. Dance of the Dead Man. Dead Men.
Yeah.
By Hap Wilson. Check that one out, too. Anyway, other than that, that's it.
Yes.
All right, you got nothing else?
I got nothing else.
I got nothing. feel like I'm forgetting something, though.
Well, today was Remembrance Day. Was that one of those?
Today was Remembrance Day.
I took the day off. Me and a bunch of my Navy buddies went down to stand with everybody else, went to the Liege afterwards, and so on.
I remember back in the day when it used to be like a holiday. And from works, like people that worked got the holiday.
Oh, yeah.
So that they could go down.
Hmm.
And schools usually did something.
There's a lot of kids there today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember when I was in Air Cadets that we were down there every year.
Yeah.
Right. Some of us, we all had to march or stand there, or some of us, everybody got put into a draw to be one of the stand on the cenotaph.
Oh, okay. Right? Yeah.
So, you know how they stand there with the gun.
Yeah.
Upside the rifle on their foot, sort of thing, and looking down.
Yeah.
So everybody got put in for that to see who could do that. But yeah, I don't think it's celebrated as much as it. But this year seemed to be.
There's a bit of a resurgence.
Yeah.
And just because of world events and so on, but yeah, it's starting to come back a little bit, and we're losing a lot more veterans from World War II now. We're coming down to the last few and. So it's a lot of more recent events where you still have veterans.
Yep. So, anyway. There's something else I'm forgetting. I can't remember what it is. I'll remember the minute we click off.
Exactly.
So. All right. Well, if you want to find out more about us, you can find us at PanelicAdventuresRadio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Or you can download or stream our episodes from iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or you can just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com and you can stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with your friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.